Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning and a very happy Father's Day weekend. This is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And a couple of stories that you might not have caught late Friday afternoon if you checked out for the weekend a little early and maybe doing something else last night. Lawmakers will be demanding answers on the arrest of several employees of Stephen Colbert's show at the Capitol Thursday. The lawmakers will demand those answers when Congress resumes next week. Several people, including CBS employees who work for Stephen Colbert's late night show, were arrested for unlawful entry to the Capitol. Last Thursday, the individuals, including Triumph the Insult Dog, puppeteer Robert Smigel, who is a frequent guest of Colbert's, they were not credentialed to be walking around without an escort, according to a House Republican source. Others arrested, including one of the writers, Josh Comers, and associate producer Allison Martinez. The group was cleared into the complex by staffers for the Representative Jake Auchincloss, Democrat of Massachusetts, and the House January 6th committee member Adam Schiff, Democrat of California. Now, that might not be a big deal until you take it up a notch. The group reportedly banged on doors of several Republican offices, including that of the Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California, Jim Jordan of Ohio, and Lauren Boebert of Colorado. They allegedly filmed a skit for Colbert's late show program that was to center around the January 6th hearings. Well, Republican Representative Rodney Davis, he's from Illinois. He is the ranking member on the House Committee on Administration. He told Fox News on Friday he will demand answers when Congress returns to session next week. It's going to blow over. It's not going to be a big deal in the long run, but some irony there. Banging on the doors of the Republicans. Also last night, there were more protests outside the homes of Supreme Court justices, this time the home of Justice Clarence Thomas. Federal officials could take those protesters and move them away because there's a federal law that prohibits intimidation of Supreme Court justices at their homes. But the feds, for whatever reason, don't seem to want to enforce that. Well, it is 6:11. It is the Saturday Morning Update. A couple things seem to keep standing out as you look at politics in the big picture and you kind of look back over the week. The administration continues to try and just pull the wool completely over our eyes. That's one thing. Misinformation, lies, call it what you want. Second thing, the confusion, the miscommunication, the just things that kind of make your head spin. Now, as an example, you may have heard that the Federal Reserve hiked the interest rate 75 basis points. That's 3/4 of a point when it comes to your credit card or mortgages, things like that. So this is the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell. He's talking about it. Listen to what he says, and then we'll dissect it a little bit.
Clearly, today's 75 basis point increase is an unusually large one, and I do not expect moves of this size to be common. From the perspective of today, either a 50 basis point or a 75 basis point increase seems most likely at our next meeting. We will, however, make our decisions meeting by meeting, and we'll continue to communicate our thinking as clearly as we can.
We don't expect it to be common. This is unusual. But we're probably going to do it again in the next meeting, okay? So maybe it is common if you do it once and then you do it again in your next meeting. Slightly confusing, somewhat contradictory, and it just kind of leaves your head spinning. This is the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, talking about the Fed rate increase.
That spending produced excellent rewards for Americans, and at most, it contributed modestly to inflation.
Okay, so she's saying, well, just a little modest contribution to inflation when they did all that spending. Well, Here's how President Biden looks at it. Now, this is only 6 seconds, and I want you to think about the last time you went to the grocery store, maybe the last time you went to the gas station and filled up. You're looking at kind of your monthly budget, or you're looking at your bank statement, you're looking at your credit card statements. So think about that, put it in perspective, and the president sums it up in 6 seconds.
Families are carrying less debt nationwide. They have more savings nationwide.
You're carrying less debt and you have more savings when the gasoline prices are up over $5 a gallon and you go into the grocery store? How can you have more savings and less debt? It just doesn't make any sense. So this talk about the rate increases and things like that, you know, Ro Khanna is a progressive. He's not buying all this.
I don't think you can just say, let the Fed deal with it. You raise rates at big intervals, then that could trigger a recession.
So Steve Scalise took a look at it. He's, of course, on the Republican side of the aisle, and here's how he sums it up. He's a Republican from Louisiana.
This is a disturbing pattern we've seen from President Biden on so many of the problems that he's created that are hurting families, is that he just blames everybody else. You know, maybe they don't have mirrors in the White House, but he's looking around and he's pointing fingers, he's throwing spaghetti at the walls, and nobody's buying it because they're watching his policies destroy so many parts of the fabric of the country.
The misinformation, the just sort of detachment from reality of the president, I think this kind of sums it up. This is highlights, if you want to call them highlights, more like lowlights, but excerpts from the president's address to the AFL-CIO meeting this week. I think it was in Philadelphia. And listen to some of the things the president says. He contradicts himself. He talks about bipartisanship, and then he just excoriates the Republicans. Just kind of listen to this and see if you buy any of this.
20 million Americans had lost their jobs on the last guy. In fact, so many Americans lost their jobs that my predecessor became just the second president in history to leave office with fewer jobs in America than when he took office. Remember those long lines of cars stretching miles back waiting for just a box of food to be put back in their trunk? It wasn't just poor folk. It was working class folks, middle class folks. A lot of pretty nice cars in those lines. I don't want to hear any more of these lies about reckless spending. We're changing people's lives. The problem is, Republicans in Congress are doing everything they can to stop my plans to bring down costs on ordinary families. I believe in bipartisanship, but I have no illusions about this Republican Party, the MAGA Party. They seem to think that the problem in America today is that working families aren't paying enough.
So you heard him talking about the Trump administration and the jobs that were lost during the Trump administration. Funny how he forgot to mention COVID-19 hit the country, basically completely shut things down. We were locked out of work. There was a lockdown. President Biden forgot to mention that when he railed on President Trump about employment. And you may recall that it was the lowest unemployment rates that we'd had in years when President Trump was in office. And then Biden tries to slip that one past you without talking about COVID-19. Just an example of the misinformation and lies. I mean, some of this stuff is just flat out lies. I don't know. Maybe they're running out of Pinocchios over at the Washington Post forums. We're at 6:17. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Oxon Hill, accident activity reported southbound on 210, right near Kirby Hill Road, so use caution there. There is still accident activity on westbound 66 before Route 28 in Centerville, blocking the left lane. And watch out for various lane closures on the eastbound side between the Prince William Parkway and Route 29 in Centerville. You will find some slowing traffic through that work zone. Right now, no delays to report along the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia on southbound 270 between Quince Orchard Road and 370. Two right lanes blocked with sinkhole repair work. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and breezy on this Saturday. Much cooler temperatures, only reaching the mid to upper 70s, but very comfortable. Low humidity with dew points back in the 50s and 40s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the majority of the region under mostly clear skies. Mostly sunny on Father's Day and Juneteenth. High temperatures tomorrow near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees in the nation's capital, 618 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. And we continue to kind of look at the world and how seriously this is impacting all of us. You know, there was a time when politicians, you know, you could have somebody in the White House that you didn't agree with politically, whether it's Republican or Democrat, but life went on. You know, it wasn't really a big problem for you. You didn't necessarily like the direction of things, but it really didn't impact your daily life. But this administration is impacting everybody's daily life in the most negative ways. Now, let's turn to gas prices and oil. Our energy secretary is Jennifer Granholm, and you've probably seen and heard her a few times, and this might not have been the best job for her to take on in this administration. She might have been better off somewhere else in the administration, maybe not in the cabinet, but this is our secretary of energy. And she's talking about the gas prices, and she talks about, you know, well, it's this price here, but look overseas, it's much higher. Well, it's always been much higher in Europe, and it's kind of like two wrongs don't make a right, Madam Secretary. Listen to it.
In fact, gas prices today over $5 a gallon in the United States. If you were in Canada, you would be paying over $6.20, something like that. If you were in Germany, you'd be paying $8 a gallon. If you were in Singapore, you'd be paying $9 a gallon. It's happening all across the world.
Don't worry about you paying $5 a gallon because people around the world are paying a whole heck of a lot more. So, you know, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. Two wrongs do not make a right. So I want to turn to another gem here. Now, this is President Biden. We'll take you back to 2020. This was in the debate, and he was talking about the oil industry and what he would do to the oil industry. And I want to play this because it may put some perspective on why the oil companies have been responding to the president and have been basically handling their business the way they have since the president came into office. This was what he said he would do when he got into the White House.
Number one, no more subsidies for fossil fuel industry, no more drilling on federal lands, no more drilling, including offshore, no ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. And
okay. So if you're an oil industry executive and you hear that from the president, who is incoming now at this point, back in January of 2021, what are you going to do? How are you going to protect your business? How are you going to protect your shareholders, which is why you're there, when you have a president promising basically to destroy you? And the president has continued to rail on the oil industry all week. But after that kind of preview, 12 seconds, that's all it was, but it was certainly a message to the oil industry. Now, the president was on the lawn yesterday, getting on the helicopter, and he took a couple of questions. You'll notice at the end, it's very abrupt. Why is it so abrupt? No, it's not because we cut it short. It's because the First Lady, Jill Biden, cut it short. You'll hear it.
So if you just take to what a barrel of oil costs in that case, it should not be decided to make an exorbitant profit, number one. Number two, I've contacted them, with my team has, to ask what their plans are and to give any suggestions they have. They have over 9,000 leases. 9,000. They can drill so the hell won't have it. But they're not doing it, number two. Number three, I think we're going to be in a position where we're going to...
That's it. Number three. Oh, well, Jill pulled him away. Now, maybe she was in a hurry to get to the beach. Of course, that's where they were helicoptering off to. And, you know, he can do what he wants, I guess, in his free time. But if I were the president of the United States, I don't think I would be helicoptering over to get to the beach. It's not a good look when most Americans are going to have a real problem affording the beach, whether it's getting to the beach and the gasoline prices, or the cost of everything else that is skyrocketing due to inflation. So he's able to do that, but I guess if I was in the White House for 4 years, I might stay a little closer to home when we had crises going on as opposed to running off to the beach. But I guess he can do what he wants to do because he is El Presidente, and obviously I am not. You notice I said 4 years because it's quite dubious that he's going to be back for a second term. Have a little trouble getting the support of AOC. She was on CNN last Sunday, and you may have heard this already, but it is kind of an amusing clip when Dana Bash asks Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about whether the president will run and whether she would support him.
Before we go, I just want to ask about President Biden. He is saying he's going to run again in 2024. Will you support him?
You know, if the president chooses to run again in 2024, I mean, first of all, I'm focused on winning this majority right now and preserving a majority this year in 2022. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think if the president has a vision, then that's something certainly we're all willing to entertain and examine when the time comes.
That's not a yes.
Yeah, you know, I think we should endorse when we get to it. But I believe that the president has been doing a very good job so far. And, you know, should he run again, I think that I think it's we'll take a look at it.
Okay.
But right now we need to focus on winning a majority instead of a presidential election.
We'll take a look at it. She was a little kind of confused as to which way to go on that, because I think maybe she wanted to toe the party line and support the president, but then she's thinking, oh, my goodness, what's the squad going to say? What's everybody else on the team going to say if I support the president? So she didn't know which way to go on that one and giggled her way out of it a la Vice President Harris style. It is 6:26. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up on the Saturday Morning Update this morning, we'll talk with Jennifer Harper. She's got some interesting developments in the world of Matt Drudge at the Drudge Report. Jim Trusty will join us, of course, our legal expert, and we'll talk about the January 6th committee hearings with Jim. John Gizzi on the way. We'll get the very latest on the primaries, some very interesting primary developments this week and in the weeks ahead. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer on the latest on Ukraine and the mess at the southern border with Mexico. And KT McFarland will join us, and she will put it all in perspective as we look at the Biden administration and what's next for the country. That's all coming up. Stay with us right here on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, U.S. Capitol Police say that officers arrested seven unauthorized people in a congressional office building Thursday night and charged them with unlawful entry. The people identified themselves as being affiliated with the CBS Late Show with Stephen Colbert. That from a person familiar with the matter telling the Associated Press. The person could not discuss details of the investigation publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity. The incident Thursday night followed the third public hearing by the House panel investigating the January 6th Capitol riot. U.S. Capitol Police statement says the case remains, quote, an active criminal investigation and may result in additional criminal charges. After 2 days of deliberations, jurors in a civil trial deciding on sexual abuse allegations against Bill Cosby will have to start from scratch on Monday. By the end of the day Friday, jurors had decided on nearly all the questions put before them, including whether he had sexually assaulted the plaintiff, Judy Huth, at the Playboy Mansion in 1975. And AT&T and Verizon will not power up some of their wireless towers that are near airports until next summer. They need to give airlines more time to make sure the new 5G service will not interfere with aircraft. 6:32, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Really, we're not accidents on 66 westbound before Route 28 in Centerville now cleared away. You will find just a brief delay there. And eastbound, watch out for a work zone between the Prince William Parkway and Route 29 in Centerville. Watch out for various lane closures there and some slowing traffic through the area. Right now, if you're traveling along the Beltway, looks like everything is moving at speed so far, headed from Springfield and Tyson's in towards Bethesda and College Park, and no delays headed towards Largo, heading in towards the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Also, everything looking good right now on 95, headed from the Capitol Beltway to the Baltimore Beltway. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and breezy on this Saturday. Much cooler temperatures, only reaching the mid to upper 70s, but very comfortable. Low humidity with dew points back in the 50s and 40s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the majority of the region under mostly clear skies. Mostly sunny on Father's Day and Juneteenth. High temperatures tomorrow near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:33 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us each week. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, WashingtonTimes.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, the White House hasn't come up with any solutions to the rising gas prices. You do have one from a Republican?
Yes, I do. I took note of that this week. This is an interesting commentary from House Republican Whip Steve Scalise. And he's our gentleman from Louisiana. And anyway, you know, he points out that President Biden is likely going to journey to Saudi Arabia in mid-July. That's like NBC News and a lot of other people reporting that. And they're all speculating that he's certainly seeking ways to reduce the price of gas. And there's one way that I picked up this quote from Mr. Scalise this week, and he certainly just kind of nails the whole issue, and he's confronting the price of our fuel these days just like everybody else. And you have to remember that, well, everybody knows that the price per gallon on average nationwide is $5.03. But, you know, it's also $6.63 in places like San Luis Obispo, California. So, but let's go back to Mr. Biden here for a moment. And here is what Mr. Scalise had to say this week. He said that President Biden's going to fly to Saudi Arabia to beg them to produce more oil. Just think about the lunacy of that, Mr. Scalise says. He says, President Biden, who talks about global warming all the time, I wonder how many people are going to ask him what the carbon footprint of his trip to Saudi Arabia is. Over 5,000 miles traveled to go to Saudi Arabia to beg the princes to produce more oil after he begged Russia President Vladimir Putin to produce more oil, and Putin said no. So he's got a clear alternative in mind. This is like right just straight ahead. He says a few weeks ago when he tried to call Saudi Arabia to produce more oil, they didn't even return Biden's phone call. President Biden, you do not need to go to Saudi Arabia to find a way to produce more energy. It's right here in America. Again, from Louisiana, he says, in fact, you can go less than 1,000 miles to Port-Fourchon, Louisiana, in my district, the hub of drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, where President Biden shut down production of American lands, shut down American energy. He could fly less than 1,000 miles to get that oil. And kind of reminded me of that time way back when Sarah Palin used to say, drill, baby, drill. And ironically, Rick, I did history on that. The first time that was said in public, when Ms. Palin said that, she said it to then-Vice President Joe Biden. That was during their official debate during the 2008 presidential election. Drill, baby, drill, she said. So that's your oil lesson for today.
Well, how about our breakfast lesson for today?
Oh, my gosh. Well, with all the rising prices, I tried to figure out something that would kind of come home for everybody to understand really what this inflation is all about. So I decided to figure out the inflation of a typical breakfast. Let's just call it a Biden breakfast. So I went on to the Consumer Price Index just to find out how much everything has gone up. This is, again, the Consumer Price Index released by the Bureau of Standards Labor Statistics this week. Here we go. The price of eggs is up by 32.2%. Ooh. Bacon and breakfast sausage, up by 15.6%. Coffee, by 15.3%. Milk for that coffee, up by 16.9%. Sugar or substitute for the coffee, 9.3%. Juice of any kind, Rick, 11.8%. Bread for that toast, 8.7%. Butter or margarine, 20.8%. 6.2%. And, you know, if you can't do without coffee or donuts, that's I'm on that list. Those are all up by 10.6%, and that fresh grapefruit that you long for is up by 16.1%. And, you know, if you want to check on all this stuff, it's kind of ghastly to look, but you can't take your eyes off of these numbers. You can find them at the Bureau of Statistics at BLSstate.gov.
The growing number of journalists and quote-unquote journalists who we find on social media, etc., how are the media people kind of feeling about the media in general these days?
Yes, oh my gosh, the journalists. Let's talk about them. Well, this was a mighty feat on behalf of the Pew Research Center. They managed to survey 11,889 U.S.-based journalists.
Wow.
This is a poll. I didn't think there were that many running around, but apparently there are. And they analyzed what they had to say, and the title tells all. Journalists sense turmoil in their industry amid continued passion for their work. This was released on Tuesday, and here's just a couple of the numbers for you guys. 7 in 10 journalists say they are very or somewhat satisfied with their job, and 77% say they would pursue a career in journalism again. At the same time, when asked to describe their industry in a single word, nearly three-quarters of the respondents, 72%, used a word with negative connotations. The most common words were related to struggling and chaos. And again, this is coming from the Pew Research Center. They said just 14% of journalists surveyed say they think the U.S. public has a great deal or even a fair amount of trust in the information it gets from news organizations these days. Most believe that Americans as a whole have only some trust or little trust. 42% have no trust in the media anymore. And another 71% of the journalists said that made-up news and information presented a very big problem for the nation. And an equal number said they were confident in their ability to recognize fake stuff. Well, we'll see about that. And also roughly 8 in 10 journalists, that's 82%, say journalists should keep their views out of what they report on. Oh, yes, please, everyone, do that. Although there is less agreement among journalists over whether journalists meet this standard. And just over half, 55%, think that journalists largely are able to keep their views out of their reporting, while 43% say they are unable to. And interestingly enough, another 42% say they have been harassed by someone outside their news organization in the past year. So not an easy job. Again, that's a Pew Research Center poll of almost 12,000 journalists. So there's a report for today, Rick.
You know, the Drudge Report has been a website that people go to for news for a long time. He's one of the kind of the pioneers there. And what, he's got not one but two movies coming out?
Yes, this is, well, you know, he certainly deserves it. I mean, he really was the forefront in internet news, as they used to call it, and certainly it's a go-to place for all kinds of stuff, not so much news about Trump anymore, but all sorts of stuff about Hollywood and, you know, what's going on overseas and clandestine matters and so forth. And it's no surprise that there are not one but two movies now in the making about Matt Drudge. Think about that. Interesting. A very influential force he is in both media and politics. And here's the production companies. Prospect Park is the production company. It was founded by entertainment industry executive Jack Quantinetz, and he has revealed to CNN that he has secured the rights to The Drudge Revolution. That is a biography that is written by Matthew Lysiak. He's an author of a whole bunch of other books, and he's a former reporter for the New York Daily News. He's also written the script for the project, and this is The Drudge Revolution. And Drudge Film Number 2 is going to be produced by Cross Creek Pictures, and they have announced on June 8th, pretty recently, that it has acquired a script called Drudge. And this is written by Cody Brother, and this is according to Deadline Hollywood, an industry source. And Mr. Brother is both an actor and a writer who lives in Los Angeles. And also, besides those two movies, there's also an FX series on Mr. Drudge called Impeachment, The American Crime Story, and that has revisited the era. And he's chronicling all of the circumstances when Mr. Drudge, and his much-read, much-quoted Drudge Report was launched way, way back in 1995. So that kind of sounds like a period piece, lots of cool costumes, et cetera. So those are your Drudge movie report for today.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Thank you very much, as always. 6:45, Jim Trustee coming up next. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Arlington, watch out for an accident on 395 South, just north of Exit 9 in Arlington. That is for 110, and that has all southbound lanes closed due to this accident, so do be aware of that and follow police direction. Also, you will find slow-going traffic right now if you're traveling in through the Manassas area on eastbound 66. Watch out for work zone with various lanes closed between the Prince William Parkway and Route 29 in Centerville. Earlier accident in westbound on 66 at Route 28 has been cleared away. Also, look out for accident activity on 95 northbound in the Hanover area as you approach 895. That blocks the right lane. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and breezy on this Saturday. Much cooler temperatures, only reaching the mid to upper 70s, but very comfortable. Low humidity with dew points back in the 50s and 40s. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s across the majority of the region under mostly clear skies. Mostly sunny on Father's Day and Juneteenth. High temperatures tomorrow near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:46 on the Saturday morning update.
The latest news and information sent straight to your inbox with the WMAL newsletter.
Register today at WMAL.com/email.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trustee joins us, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. And a happy Father's Day to you, Jim.
Hey, thanks, and good morning.
The House January 6th committee hearings continuing this past week. And, Jim, let's look at it from a legal perspective. You, as a former prosecutor, now defense attorney, does this look kind of like your typical hearing?
No, not even a typical congressional hearing. And I do think that's one of the interesting things about this particular hearing, or maybe troublesome component of this particular hearing. You know, all congressional hearings are basically built for impact, right? They're there to kind of marshal their evidence and their arguments and, you know, have a big wow factor for the general public when they tune in on these high-profile hearings. It, conversely, trials are a little different. You know, civil trials, criminal trials, you're trying to determine the truth. And to do that, you have a lot of procedural protections for the accused and a lot of guardrails for the finders of fact to figure out exactly what happened. And I'm not saying it's perfect, don't get me wrong. And I'm also not saying that every congressional hearing should be a trial. All I'm saying is these are really important institutional differences, and there's a couple of ways that that has played out in this hearing that's really kind of distinct. The first thing is what I've noticed over the course of several days of testimony is the prosecution, and it's kind of all one prosecution, they get these rolling opening statements, and it's really kind of a phenomenal thing that when I was a prosecutor, if I could have kept doing opening statements all the way through the trial, I might have gotten some convictions. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff to be able to keep marshaling argument and saying, well, this is what we're going to hear about today, and this is why it's so important. And so that's an interesting component of this that you don't see even in a lot of congressional hearings. They may have a true opening statement, but not rolling statements. The other thing is there's just no opposition here. You've got the handpicked Republicans that have joined with the Democrats in terms of their condemnation of President Trump. And so without any opposition, there's not even cross-examination. And you know, you can kind of joke about the Russian model, right, where the prosecutor stands up and says, Your Honor, this man is really guilty. And the defense attorney stands up and says, he sure is. That's kind of how it feels in these proceedings when there's no opportunity to challenge the narrative or to cross-examine any of the witnesses. So, again, I think that the procedural protections are kind of lacking, but that doesn't mean there's not a compelling story to be told or interesting fact to be derived from this process. It's just a little foreign to someone who's used to the courthouse. The other thing that I thought was really kind of fascinating, and it's lost in the emotional shuffle, is this issue that came up this week about what Vice President Pence could do or should do or was being asked to do. And it's certainly politically dynamite, politically ugly to hear about this rift, to hear about these disagreements between President Trump and Vice President Pence. And there's a lot of kind of sensational moments of testimony. But the legal issue that I think is really kind of fascinating buried within that, and it's something that even Judge Luttig talked about for a few moments in his very halting presentation, is what exactly does the vice president have discretion to do? Do they have the ability to use discretion when it comes to certifying the electoral vote, or is it entirely clerical and that there's no real ability for the vice president to do anything? And, you know, as it turns out, Vice President Pence took the latter view, but it's not 100% clear from the Constitution. And what I think is really fascinating is, let's say he gets it wrong. Let's say the vice president does something that most people think is wrong when it comes to certifying or not certifying or delaying the Electoral College vote. How the heck do you take enforcement action? In other words, who goes to court? Does the court listen to this? Does the court intervene? And I think those are really knotty procedural questions that are not resolved. And maybe that could be the one possible good thing that comes out of these committee hearings, is if they really wade into those specific procedural thorny issues and try to figure out what the answer is. Because it's not clear now, and maybe we'll never have another historical moment that goes up into the edge of that potential abyss. But to me, that's more interesting than kind of the who struck John of, you know, what President Trump said and why and when.
We've seen the protests continuing outside the homes of Supreme Court justices with the intent to intimidate them when it comes to the decision on Roe versus Wade. Finally, a Supreme Court protection law was passed. Tell us a little bit about what's in it and what's not.
Yeah, it's a start, but it certainly shouldn't have been the finish. I mean, what it does is it basically authorizes the U.S. Marshals Service to provide deeper protection for the Supreme Court justices and particularly for their families. And in an age of doxing, you know, when all of a sudden online you can find out where Supreme Court justices' kids go to school, I think that extra measure of protection beyond the justices themselves makes a lot of sense. But, you know, this law gets passed and there's still two gaping holes. One is, we have a law, specifically 18 U.S.C. 1507, completely on point to break up these protests. And even after an attempted assassination of a Supreme Court justice, the FBI and DOJ refuse to uphold this federal law. I just find it stunning, perplexing, endangering, and simply wrong that they refuse to enforce this law. And again, I don't mean necessarily locking everybody up, but clear the streets of that neighborhood. It's an illegal assembly. And give the neighborhood and the children of the Supreme Court justice some peace. And then if they come back, use it as an arrest basis. So that's one thing that's still a problem. I'm not sure that it was ever going to be addressed by this protection law. But the other thing, frankly, is the leak. You know, everything got started here with a completely immoral act and a shocking act in terms of betraying the confidences within the Supreme Court. But there's not a clear federal law that criminalizes that leak. I mean, there may be some very hyper-technical kind of theft statutes we can play with, but I think this was an opportunity to go ahead and address that problem as well, and Congress chose not to do it. So, you know, I think we've still got some holes in the protection game and the sanctity of the Supreme Court, but I guess a little protection is better than none.
We've seen the images of the attacks at pregnancy centers around the country, and there's been talk of the FBI getting involved. What's your take on the Department of Justice investigation?
Well, reserve judgment, I guess, would be the starting point here. I mean, it has been a conspicuous silence from the Attorney General. You know, this Attorney General is quite comfortable saying things quite loudly when it comes to the pet causes of this department. So if you've got an interracial police shooting somewhere, he will weigh in quickly and heavily. He'll take over local police departments in terms of their operations. If you've got, you know, school board protests where parents don't like CRT, he's happy to bow to the pressure of the school board union and demonize these parents. So we've seen a lot of political activism by this attorney general, but he's awfully quiet about Jane's revenge. And frankly, what I hope is if the FBI is at least doing these investigations earnestly and pursuing it, I certainly hope that they use the full toolbox that's available to them as federal investigators and federal prosecutors. I mean, Rick, there's probably 8 or 9 federal laws that completely cover perfectly the conduct of this criminal enterprise. And that starts with my good old stomping grounds from organized crime days, RICO. This is a racketeering case waiting to happen. You've got multiple acts by a group of people with a leadership structure. Arson is a predicate offense for RICO. You've got riot statutes. You've got even protection of free access to clinics would apply to this. And, Rick, really interesting little note. One of the statutes that applies to at least the intentions of Jane's Revenge, rioting, is 18 U.S.C. 2101, and the statute specifically says, this is really kind of an unusual exhortation, it says, if the Attorney General believes someone broke this law, then the Department of Justice shall proceed as speedily as possible with prosecution of such person. I mean, I've never seen anything like that in a statute that basically says, we're really serious about this statute. If you've got somebody that's either rioting or conspiring to commit riots, you need to investigate and prosecute it promptly. And that's an unusual exhortation that one doesn't see, and it's also one that's being ignored so far by this Attorney General. So it's early. I mean, it doesn't take a matter of days or even weeks sometimes to build a sufficient case against a criminal enterprise. But I'll be watching this carefully because I think it's a real litmus test of whether we have a thoroughly politicized and maybe compromised Department of Justice or one that's really going to follow the evidence aggressively.
Jim Trustee, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. You can follow him on Twitter at Trustee Lawyer. As always, Jim, thank you very much and have a great Father's Day weekend.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good one yourself.
Thank you. 7 o'clock news coming up. John Gizzi, KT McFarland, and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.